Looking for Jonathan helping with the refurbishing of those stern wheelers. A very good move. Our guest today, Norm Chamberlain, member of Territorial Council from Whitehorse East, executive committee member in charge of health, welfare, and rehabilitation, and Yukon's member of parliament these past 15 years or so, Eric Nielsen. Mr. Chamberlain, the program's being held today at a request made by yourself. Your opening statement.
Yes, well, John, the reason why I asked that I be given the opportunity to appear on this show with Eric Nielsen is to attempt to get across to the public that the statements that are being made from time to time, attacking me personally as a member of the executive committee and attacking the territorial council of which I am a member, are indeed false. Completely false. The attitude that is being adopted by Mr. Nielsen is that unless anybody agrees with his philosophies, then nobody is doing any work. I'd like to say this, that the Territorial Council, all members of the Territorial Council, whatever their political hues, worked to the best of their ability to advance legislation for the Yukon Territory. Sometimes the legislation is not happy for individual members, but the majority rules. And Mr. Nielsen is fully aware that in the legislative body that he belongs to, it's the majority rules. And his snide attacks, and I'll go to the extent of saying that his vicious attacks upon me are such that I have no intention of tolerating any more without coming back to him and telling him what I think of him. And this is the first opportunity that I have had publicly to say this. I have never at any time attacked him for his public office because it's difficult for any person in public office to satisfy the needs of all people. And I sympathize in many ways with attacks that have been made upon him and with him because of those attacks, which are unwarranted at times. But for him to continue using me as a scapegoat, as a matter of fact, in these last federal election, when I had nothing at all to do with it, his opening statement was to the effect that it's time that we got rid of Chamberlain, Brannigan, and Trudeau, and something that I had I was in no way involved with it, yet he had to start his campaign with an attack upon me. This is the reason that I'm here, and I'm prepared to do battle with him, and if he wants to, he can go any way he likes, and I am prepared to debate with him on any particular subject that affects the government of the Yukon Territory, because the Yukon Territory is going forward step by step. It is not being retarded. The only retardness that's taking place is Mr. Nielsen's attempt to divide the people of the Yukon, to divide Indian against white against white, and Indian against Indian. This is his philosophy, and his smooth, oily-type atmosphere doesn't fizz on me in any way, because I'm one of these people that know him for too long. Okay.
Mr. Nielsen.
Well, all I can say in reply to an outburst like that is that as a public figure, if Mr. Chamberlain can't stand the heat, he should get out of the kitchen. And I'm very sorry that he introduced a racist note at the outset of this program into our discussions. No one, least of all me, is attempting to inject any racism into the Indian claim situation that is now before the people of the Yukon. On the contrary, my speeches in the media and my letters to the media will display quite clearly that what I have been trying to do is to bring about a much better understanding between the two groups in the Yukon, so that just that very thing that Mr. Chamberlain accuses me of will not develop. And perhaps if he were not so emotional, he might reconsider injecting that kind of note into a discussion such as this. It smacks of the same kind of thing done by Trudeau in the throne speech debate when he accused certain members in the opposition of riding to 107 seats and 30 seats respectively on the backs of French-Canadian racism. I don't think it's appropriate for discussion of this kind.
Mr. Chamberlain,
I'd just like to repeat a few words here. First of all, there is no intention, was there any intention, of introducing racism at all. This is another area of where Mr. Nielsen is very smooth in his talk and attempts to distort what has been said. Now, in his quiet, legalistic courtroom manner, he has now attempted to do that once more. There is no doubt in my mind, and I am not being emotional. People know me that I say what I say because I believe in what I say. I don't talk out of both sides of my mouth in the same manner that Mr. Nielsen has become accustomed to, because I would like it to be reminded that I was one of the people that worked very hard and diligently, much to my regret at this time, to get him elected to Parliament. Mr. Nielsen is entirely wrong when he suggests that I am bringing any racism in. I am just simply saying that you have been, Mr. Nielsen, you have been creating an attitude of hatred in the Yukon, that it's about time it stopped. And you in your capacity can do much to prevent that hatred continuing. But you will not stop that because you are mostly concerned with partisan politics and not with the good of the people of the Yukon. And it's about time that the public at large knew and understood that you may be fooling them simply because you think that the public are not thinking clearly. But let me tell you this much, that the people of the Yukon are much more intelligent than you give them credit for.
Absolutely. The results of the last election showed that quite clearly.
On the contrary, it was an error on their part.
They're foolish, eh?
No, they're not foolish, but it was an error. Even clever people make errors.
We're talking with Norm Chamberlain, executive committee member in charge of health, welfare, and rehabilitation in the territorial government and elected member for Whitehorse East. Eric Nielsen, member of parliament for the Yukon Territory. We'll be taking a break. We'll be back in a minute. If you have a question or a comment that's pertinent to what's being discussed, give us a call at 667-7891. We'll be back in a minute.
Hogan's Department Store has some 88-cent buys for you today and Wednesday only that'll really brighten up your budget. Handmade soaps and assorted delicious fragrances are 2 for 88 cents. A 4-ounce jar of Noxzema Skin Cream, 88 cents. Stainless steel candy thermometers with protected bulb and insulated handle, now on special for just $3.88. Stop into Hogan's. Shop for many handy items for 88-cent special prices. For an intimate experience in dining, in a unique atmosphere, board the riverboat Nichia and visit the captain's locker. For a weekend treat, try Scampi's, broiled baby lobster tail served with melted butter, french fries, and coleslaw. Drop in on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. for a delectable brunch of good waffles, cinnamon, strawberry, and blueberry. The captain's locker open daily, and they'll cater to your business luncheon or wedding parties. The Captain's Locker on the Alaska Highway.
15 and a half minutes past to 11 o'clock. Once again, here's John.
Thank you very much, Earl. Just for the enlightenment of some of our listeners and our viewers, the Yukon political entity is set up under the terms of the Yukon Act, which is a federal act of parliament, bringing us into the federal sphere. And it is the territorial council is established by rights of that act, the Office of Commissioner is established by rights of that act as well. And it is, of course, the Yukon Act that, in fact, was changed to allow the setting up of the committee system that we now have. And, Mr. Nielsen, you have referred to the elected members of the executive committee, of whom Mr. Chamberlain is one, as pseudo-bureaucrats.
Yeah. When Chrétien, the minister, announced these changes in the House of Commons some 2 years ago now, I debated quite strongly against them, saying that he was doing the wrong thing and that the only reason that he was doing it was to divide a previously united council. And I expressed the view in the House of Commons that it would not work and that all that he was doing was smuggling 2 elected members of the 7-man council into the bureaucracy, structuring it as he did with a majority of 3 civil servants who have to take their instructions from him in the long run, and only 2 of the elected members. I urged that the majority on that executive committee should be of the people, should be elected members, should be 3 elected members and 2 civil servants, and that even these civil servants should be phased out so that eventually, very shortly, we would have a wholly elected executive council, I prefer to call it, which is the historical growth of this kind of structure. And it's only in this way that we will get the responsible kind of government which can be called true reform. It can't be brought about in a council of only 7 members. My minimum figure, which I took from the unanimity of council over 9 years, is 15. But there are those that believe it can work with 11. But very few persons that have studied the matter at all would reduce that number of 11, and have them and have the council work in a practical way.
Mr. Chamberlain, you've been referred to from time to time as a pseudo-bureaucrat.
Yes, well, this is Mr. Nilsson's point in attacking me, in referring me as a pseudo-bureaucrat. Now, let me say this and remark that Mr. Nilsson has just made. I find no argument in what Mr. Nilsson has said vis-a-vis the formation and extension of council members to a larger number, to an expansion of the executive committee, and I have no argument with him on the basis that I believe that the Yukon Act, when it was changed the last time, it should have included the executive committee members in the Yukon Act. And I am working for now, and I hope to be successful, that in forthcoming changes to the Yukon Act, that there will be indeed the executive committee written in the Act. And I agree with Mr. Nilsson that it is most improper to have an executive committee that is not incorporated within the legislation itself. I have no argument with him at all. I have taken that stand always, and I don't go back on that stand that I've taken. But the suggestion that because I happen to be an elected member of Territorial Council and elected by the majority of members in the Territorial Council to a position on the Executive Committee, that I have become a bureaucrat, is completely false. Now, Mr. Nilsson knows me well enough to know that I don't take administrative direction from anybody when it's not in the interest of the people. That I can't speak about what takes place in Executive Committee because I honor the oath of office that I've taken in that regard. But I can tell you this much, and the judge at times has had to send in to the executive committee room where we sit and meet in the jury room to tell us to quieten it down because of the fact that I work hard to make sure that the legislation and rulings by government are not on an administrative level only for an administrative benefit. I have said on this station here, and you know that, John, that I have made my position quite clear, that never at any time would I tolerate the executive committee carrying out any function for administrative convenience. And I can tell you something else, that we're fortunate to have a woman like Mrs. Watson on that executive committee who fights administration so strongly for the good of the people of the Yukon as well. Certainly, we're not in the position to have a full executive committee. But I would remind people this, that members of the executive committee introduce the legislation in the House. And if the legislation isn't legislation that's good for the people, we don't introduce it. And then how can the administration introduce the legislation? And before the legislation gets into Territorial Council, I tell you, Mrs. Watson and I, we pull that to pieces to make sure that the legislation has some bearing and interest that can go before Territorial Council. And then it's Territorial Council's responsibility to pull it to pieces to see if they can change it. That's the structure of government. Mr. Nilsson knows this, but it's a political attack that he makes upon me all the time. And as it happens, I'm not politically party-wise in relation to it. I ran as an independent. I made my position clear that I don't think it was time for political partisanship in the Territorial Council. And I've taken that stand, and I've made that stand all the way through. And this is why Eric Nilsson is wrong when he attacks me for doing the job that I work all hours of the day, and my health hasn't been too good lately, continually being attacked by this man who thinks it's a game. And this is where the people have to wake up to the ill feeling that he's creating, the hatred that exists in people's faces today because of the mob violence that's being created by his attitude.
Good morning, Talkback.
Morning.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just like to know why is it when two parties, opposition members, get together, they sound like they're having a war all the time. You know, they can't. They're always cutting each other's throats and making each other sound like he's so bad. I'm sure, you know, they could get together. They should make a lot better party if they work together and quit trying to cut each other's throat all the time. And Mr. Chambers, he was talking, I think he really does believe that people are of the Yukon are kind of nuts, you know. I don't think he realizes that what he said is that you know, he's just so busy cutting the other members' throat that he...
Well, I'll tell you, sir, you bring up a good point, because it's one we hear from time to time. Do the politicians spend too much time bickering and not enough time working together for the Yukon? I'm going to ask our guest to comment.
A lot better off, you know.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Okay. Gentlemen, can we get a comment on that? Mr. Nielsen.
I'm going to backtrack for a minute here, John, because we're on an important subject now, and that's the function of the council. I have two points to make. First, when Kretjen announced the changes in the structure of the council and the creation of the executive committee, it was by way of announcement in the House of Commons, a ministerial announcement, rather than by any alteration to the federal applicable statute, the Yukon Act. And I was very critical of the government and of Kretjen in particular for proceeding via this route, instead of by way of proper changes to the Yukon Act, where a full debate could be had, not only in Ottawa, but at the local level as well. I'd point out that I made reference to smuggling elected members from the council onto this executive committee that was going to be set up by Kretjen, and I've made reference to pseudo-bureaucrats at that time that I predicted that these members would become. Before the executive committee was in fact set up, and before any of the members were selected to serve on that executive committee, I remain convinced that the members on the executive committee are in fact pseudo-bureaucrats. They can be nothing else because, A, they're dominated by three of the civil servants who take instructions from the minister, and B, they're constantly advancing the point of view of the administration. Now, I'm sure on reflection that Mr. Chamberlain would want to correct perhaps an unintentional misimpression that he left with respect to the procedure in introducing legislation in the council. He made the statement that all of the legislation is introduced by executive members, but constitutionally, the Yukon Act gives that power to the commissioner. And that's one of the powers that has not been constitutionally passed to the council as a whole or any portion of the council. And I'm sure he'll also agree that constitutionally only the commissioner has the power to introduce a money bill in council. Now, simply because the procedure has been adopted in the council of having one or other of the members of the executive committee introducing this legislation, does not get away from the fact that the commissioner is the only person holding the lawful power to do that. And if one of the executive members of the committee refused to introduce a piece of legislation, then the commissioner can constitutionally introduce that legislation himself. So that procedurally there may have been some changes of doubtful constitutional validity, but nonetheless, the residual ultimate power lies in the commissioner, And this is what has to be changed if we're going to have any meaningful reform and if we're going to have any real responsibility placed in the hands of the elected representatives of the people here.
Norm?
There's no doubt that in certain areas what Mr. Nelson has said, I agree with him. Because I agree with that the whole concept of government in the Yukon is wrong. I agree with this, and I have no argument. Of course, I wish to put it to in this way, that if the commissioner who has the right to introduce a bill, and the bill hasn't got a seconder, in the past, the bill is it has a seconder, and the first and second readings have to be given by moved and seconded. If no territorial councillor moves or seconds it, it just doesn't go before the council. Now, this has been right the way through. But it shows that the territorial council have got strength in that. Now, I don't argue again, and I will say this quite bluntly, that I think Mr. Chrétien failed to do what was right when he included the executive committee members by way of a ministerial order. I have no argument with him. But my argument with Eric Nelson is the fact that he attacks me as a bureaucrat, as a pseudo-bureaucrat, insisting that I am just governed by administrative people. And as I say, anybody that knows me and knows my attitude knows darn well that this is not the case. But because I'm limited as to what I can say, and he knows this, and Mr. Nelson's aware of this, and this is why it's quite safe for him to say, and it would be in exactly the same way if, for some reason or other, if he had the fortune to be in a cabinet position, he would know full well that he could only speak in generalities, but couldn't say what exactly takes place within the cabinet confines. And in our executive committee, we have a quasi-cabinet confine where I'm limited to what I can say. But all I can say is that Mr. Nelson is so wrong when he suggests that Mrs. Watson and I are bureaucrats. You know, and every government has to have senior civil servants. And the attack upon the civil service by reference to them as bureaucrats attacks everybody in the civil service, from the low level to the high level. And this is another thing that I don't like about Mr. Nelson's attack. His attack against civil service, the people who help us to govern. Now, he starts with the top. He's going to say, well, I only mean the bureaucrats, the people up high. I don't mean the lower ones. But all those people that are up high, they work their way from the bottom because the civil service is their future, their life, their matter of profession, of where they go from step to step. And this is where Mr. Nelson has got to stop this nonsense and start talking in his capacity for the benefit of all of the people of the Yukon, whatever their political views. And this is what I'm saying to Mr. Nelson. He must forget his personal partisanship and hatred of people because they don't think the way he thinks, but help to make the Yukon a better place to live by constructive methods, not by destructive methods.
Well, I thought we were discussing something constructive here in the form of government that we have now in the Yukon and that we would like to have. And certainly I've been confining my remarks to that.
But you thought to me destructive.
It doesn't make any difference who was on that executive committee. I think we could improve the caliber of talent that we do have on the executive
committee.
Somebody
like who?
But that's a personal opinion.
Like who?
But it doesn't make any difference who is on the executive committee. They're bound to play the role of a pseudo-bureaucrat simply because of the 2 points I mentioned before. A, they're dominated by 3 civil servants who are bound to take their instructions in the long run from the minister. And secondly, they're constantly advancing the point of view of the administration. I think the Yukon Medical Health Care Ordinance is a good example of that, where there was an overwhelming majority of the people of the Yukon who evidenced their rejection of the design of this plan, not the principle of the plan, but the design of it. And notwithstanding that overwhelming rejection, which was conveyed to all members of the council in no uncertain terms, the executive committee unanimously led the insistence in council to have that legislation passed. Now, in my view, if the elected members on the executive committee were really representing the views of the people of the Yukon, that legislation would have been fought by them, and that there would have been seven members of council united in their opposition to that program that the administration really rammed down the throats of the people of the Yukon. And I want to reemphasize here that most of the people that signed those petitions were not against the principle of medical care insurance, and neither am I, but it was the fact that we were being treated differently in the Yukon than elsewhere in Canada. We were getting less and paying more for it.
Good morning, Talkback. We lost them. You have to be patient with us. Well, for obvious reasons.
You know, for obvious reasons, and I'll use the last words you used, for obvious reasons, the suggestion that was made before by Mr. Nelson that if it gets too hot in the kitchen, you'd get out, has just been used by Mr. Nelson. He obviously finds his arguments that he's putting up pretty weak, so all of a sudden he brings in Medicare. And this seems to be a matter of triumphant for some people. But, you know, if there's a way to attack Norm Chamberlain, let's attack Medicare. Now, his attitude now dealing with Medicare, and I am not going into a debate on Medicare, because it was a majority of council that passed it. Whether it's agreed to or not, whether it's liked or not, it's still the legislative body that passed it. I personally think it's a good plan. I think we've improved on it in some areas, and I think there's going to be in the very near future, within this year and the next few months, more improvements on it. But that has got nothing at all to do with the fact that it was the legislative body that passed the legislation, and whether it would be passed by one or two or three, it matters not, except for the fact it was done in a democratic manner, and Mr. Nelson wants to see democracy operate in Parliament. He complains, no, it's not operating in a democratic way. When the Standing Committee of Indian Affairs a couple of weeks ago ruled on a matter of approving Aboriginal rights, he ruled at the majority. Let's count the vote. What's the vote, he was asking, in the votes and proceedings, rather in the minutes of the Standing Committee, for people that read it. They know this is what he was saying. But now he objects because a different legislative body used their democratic rights to pass a piece of legislation. So, you know, I don't find anything in what he says there that's got any validity at all. Let him stay with the fact that there is required many, many areas of changes to be made in the territorial government. I think that the territorial government and the commissioner should work its way out of business as quickly as possible. It's always been my hope there. All I am asking Mr. Nelson is to recognize the fact that people in the executive committee, especially those elected ones, Mrs. Watson and I, we work darn hard for the people of the Yukon. We're not bureaucrats or pseudo-bureaucrats, as you wish to put it, so that you can get votes from different people, but because people know how I work for them. There are many of them that will say things nasty about me because I can't confront them, and I've been accused of all sorts of things, just like Mr. Nelson himself. People in public life, we're sitting ducks for people, you know, and I sympathize with him, and he must sympathize with me in that particular area as well, because we are. We're sitting ducks for lots of people. But we do try to do a job of work. And he shouldn't be critical of the manner in which I have to work because of circumstances over which I have no control, but at the same time, where we try, Mrs. Watson and I, to do what we think is right and proper on behalf of the people of the Yukon.
Good morning, Talkback.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Mr. Nelson on the fine job I believe he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I was wondering, well, Norm Chamberlain's comment on constructive and destructive politics, from what I've gathered and read through the newspapers and listened to.
Ah, the newspapers. That's
one of the most destructive politicians I've ever met.
That's another point. Yep.
That's all I'd like to say.
Thank you for calling.
Madam, I don't know whether you've ever met me or spoken to me, but you're welcome to come up and talk to me any time and find out what I think and how I think and what I say, instead of taking some of the things that are said in the newspapers. One of the newspapers referred to me as a cringing mouse in one of their editorials. Now, anybody that knows me knows that I'm not a cringing mouse. Even Eric knows that I'm not a cringing mouse. And yet, you know, I'm referred to as that.
I would hate to think of the other animal, of the animal species. Oh.
Yes. Good morning. Talk back,
we've all become the same, Eric.
Well, I have a question for Mr. Chamberlain.
Go ahead.
Norman?
Yes?
Bill Thompson speaking.
Yes.
I don't want to remain anonymous, so I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Why is it that so many people want to get rid of you and Hilda Watson? Well, can you answer that?
Yes, there is.
Well, listen, I will hang up and go on to TV.
Okay.
Righto.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Righto.
There are many people who would like to get rid of Hilda Watson. They would like to get rid of me. There are many people who would like to get rid of Eric Gilson. And, you know, it's just those things. There's no way that anybody in public service can satisfy everybody. All we can do is do our best, Bill, and there's no way else that we can go beyond that.
Good morning, talk back.
John, I'd like to speak to Eric, please.
Go ahead.
Here. I'm here.
Hello, I can hardly hear you.
I'm here.
Eric, I was listening to your last broadcast a week or so ago.
CBC?
And you left the impression that there was only 6% native bolt up in the Yukon.
Only what?
6% of the total vote that belonged to the natives in the Yukon.
That's about right, George.
Well,
used to be between 10 and 12% two elections ago, but the voting population federally of the Yukon has increased dramatically, particularly in the last 3 to 4 years. And because of that general increase, the ratio of the native population in terms of the whole vote has dropped considerably.
Well, there's 100 and Carmacks who might be in
excuse me, I don't want to get into a numbers game, but it seems
okay,
that...
Okay, John, okay.
Norm Chamberlain seems to agree with... do you have any answers to
that? I think that it's a bit... I think the whole Indian population is about 13.5%, to about 2,400 status Indians, plus...
Anyway, do you have a question on the topic today?
Okay, another thing, you mentioned that the Native Brotherhood and Yancey were asking for the moon, you know, they don't expect to get everything.
Well, who said that?
Settlement.
Who said this, George?
On the program, right?
No, I did not, George.
But, they seem to be asking for 200-300% more than they expect to get.
I didn't say any such thing, George.
You mean they expect to get it all?
George, could you ask a question pertinent to what's being discussed here today with Mr. Chamberlain and Mr. Nielsen?
Oh, well, the statement is not valid from the last time.
No, it's not, because we got both of these fellows here and they're both busy and we'd like to keep them on the topics that we're discussing between the two of them.
I think George is entitled to an answer, though. What I did say was that there was a misapprehension and a good degree of apprehension in the minds of the non-native people in the Yukon, that simply because all of these matters which were being asked for by the native people of the Yukon through the brief presented last February by the YNB to the Prime Minister, simply because they were all in the brief, the apprehension in the non-native mind was that they were going to get all of these things. And what I said was that that would deny the process of negotiation entirely, and that there's no way that anyone can conclude that the result of those negotiations is going to be the granting of everything that is asked for in that brief.
Well, what the point was, I was saying, wouldn't it be prudent for the government to offer $1 aside from there if they're going to ask for so much?
I don't think that'd sit too well with Liza Smith.
Well, if they're asking so much, anyhow, that won't take up any more time.
Okay, George, thanks for calling. Mr. Chamberlain has a comment.
Yeah, I had not, I thought I would not have to speak on this Yukon Indian Native Brotherhood matter today, but I have to take exception of what Mr. Nielsen has said, because it appears to me that Mr. Nielsen's philosophies change with the possibility of where can come votes, because he's forgotten
that he, too, is supposed to be representative of all of the people of the Yukon, and not support just boldly the native claims. And yesterday, what part that I heard of this program was that Mr. Nielsen was saying that, well, we know Norm Chamberlain stand on the Yukon Indian Native Brotherhood claims, and this is why there was an objection to me being on the negotiating committee as a stand-in instead of the commissioner at some time. And yet, what was my stand? He didn't say, Mr. Nelson didn't say what my stand was. I wonder if he'd like to reiterate what my stand is, if he seems to know so much about what my stand is.
That, so far as I can recall, yesterday, I wasn't discussing the particular stand of any individual.
You mentioned me specifically.
But myself yesterday. But there's a much, much more serious objection that can be raised with respect to any elected member of the Territorial Council acting on that negotiating committee. And you put your finger on it, just as Tony Pennicott put his finger on it yesterday on this same program. And that is that there is a basic conflict existing by virtue of the fact that an elected representative on the council is, in fact, representing all of the people of the Yukon. And therefore, he can't take one side or the other in the negotiating process. For the same reason, no member of parliament should be serving on the federal negotiating team. It would be wrong for me to be serving on the federal end of things. And it seems to me that there has to be a selection of independent and people who are free to speak their mind without any danger of conflict on that negotiating committee. Now, I don't think, not because you're Norm Chamberlain, I think the same thing applies to any elected member of council that might be selected to act on that committee. It's just wrong because there's a basic and a very deep conflict.
But you've gone away, Eric, from what I've asked you. You said yesterday you know the stand that Norm Chamberlain is taking. Now, they were your words. Am I correct in this, John?
I can't say. No, we have the tape. We have the tape
here. This is what you said.
Studio.
Now, for those, and I repeat my stand is this, that I think that the Indian people should receive some settlement for the hurt that has been done them over the years. I've maintained them. But in no way will I support the criteria that the people of the Yukon, who are not Indian, should be penalized in any way, nor that people and their children and their children's children be penalized into perpetuity. And this is what you're recommending. And although you say, Mr. Nielsen, that you're against political people being involved in negotiation, although you say that, your attitudes and the continual harangue that you make against government and everybody else on behalf of the people of India show that you, in fact, a partisan in favor of the Indian people without giving consideration to the needs of the rest of the people of the Yukon. And that is where you and I differ. I say that we must consider all people, whether they be native or non-native, whether they be Indian or non-Indian, because I say native or non-native because there are many people that are born in the Yukon who are native to Yukon, just like people who are born in Canada, and I'm not, are native to Canada. And this is the difference there, and you will not recognize it because you're a vote seeker, Mr. Nelson, and you've forgotten the nice fellow that you used to be with all the philosophies that you really had that sold me when you first went into politics. But you've unsold me now, and I don't mind telling you that straight.
Well, it doesn't seem to take much to sell you, Norm. You flip around.
That's
so
right.
Often.
It didn't take much to sell me when you sold me.
You're first a conservative,
right.
You're
that
first a liberal, and then you're a conservative, and then you're a liberal, and now you're independent. But let's get back to the this new version of the twist that you're getting across here. The reason that I am supporting the concept that is being advanced not only by the Yukon Native Brotherhood, but by the National Indian Brotherhood in this country, is that Aboriginal title is a valid legal concept recognized throughout the free world.
Canada has been dragging its feet, not intentionally for the most part, but simply because of the intrusion of economic and political barriers that have occurred over the last half century. And it is only now that we're coming to grips with the problem. But I recognize the concept of Aboriginal title on the part of the YNB, not because of votes, and not because I'm more in favor of one particular segment of our society than another, but because what they are saying is based on right. And whether you're acting for a group or for an individual as a representative of the whole of the people, you should, as far as your judgment will permit, be acting on the side of right. Like old John Diefenbaker used to say, that he may not always be right, but he'll never be found on the side of wrong. And that's the way that I like to try and gauge my own activities. So that, again, there should be no divisiveness injected into either a discussion like this or a discussion of the whole question of Aboriginal title and the negotiations that are about to get underway. Hopefully, there can be that kind of understanding generated that will permit the negotiations to come to an ultimate conclusion to the satisfaction and mutual benefit of all segments of our society in the Yukon so that we don't have permanent rifts develop.
Good morning, talk back. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry
well,
to keep
like
you waiting.
I would like to congratulate Mr. Nielsen on his job that he's doing. And I'd like to say to Mr. Chamberlain that I've never heard a grown man cry before, but I've listened to it for three quarters of an hour now, and I'm getting kind of tired of it. That's all I have to say.
Yes, I would like to reply to that, that if it's necessary for me to cry for the people of the Yukon, I'll cry for them. And I'll do more if I have to.
If you were crying for us, it would be different, but
yep.
You're not.
Ma'am, I don't know who you are, and I don't know whether you've ever met or spoken to me.
I have.
All right. Well, then in that case, all I could say that some of the things that you say now about crying, I don't cry. And certainly, if I had to cry, I repeat, if I can work myself to a frazzle for the people of the Yukon, the area that I like and love because of the good that I think the North has done for me and my family, I will continue to do so, whether you like it or not, whether Eric Nielsen likes it or not.
Well, ma'am, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Good morning, talk back.
Yes, I'd like to direct a remark to Mr. Chamberlain, please.
Go ahead. Be nice.
And I am. It seems that he's being severely criticized this morning, a real target, and I would just like to say, stick to your guns, Norm, and I would like very much to have you for my counselor.
Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, bye.
Good morning. Talk back.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Can I talk to Mr. Chambers, please?
Go right ahead.
Yes. Mr. Chambers, you made, earlier in the program, you made a statement about Eric Nielsen insinuating hatred between Indian people and white people. Can you be more specific on it?
Yes, I think that Mr. Nielsen, in his general attitudes, have been one that creates ill feeling by supporting wholeheartedly, without consideration to people who are non-Indian, the things that they have been asking for. Now, I can go back many years, and I can go back to 1958.
Well, that could work
on both
sides.
Just a moment, now. You've asked me a question. And I can go back to 1958, when I, in supporting Eric Nielsen, encouraged him to be more considerate of the Indian people by creating a band outside on Main Street so that they can participate in his election campaign. At that time, he didn't want to do it. He thought it would be bad for his public features to do that. Now, I've always supported Indian people and worked for them, and I've got lots of Indian friends, and I don't give them anything to do it. They can come to me for advice and for friendship, as they often do. When you ask me a question, how, it's the everyday attitude that he's adopting now, to seek the support of native people primarily over and above those other people. This is what I don't like. I say that, you know, quite frankly, I would like to get hold of that Indian actor and tear the darn thing to pieces so that we can have just one Canadian group of people who are Canadians to stop this separation that's continually taking place and seems to be a curse now in the Yukon. You know, I remember before Eric Nielsen came on the political scene where people were friendly towards each other, whatever their political thoughts or their political feelings are. Today, people are becoming polarized. You're either with Nielsen or you're not with Nielsen. And it doesn't matter what way you think. I have supported, as Eric says, I have supported the Conservative Party. I've supported the Conservative Party not because of the party philosophies, but because of Eric Nielsen in those years in 57-58. Because there was a bright young fella that had some sound ideas and he was coming forward with things that I thought that were good for the Yukon. And I went away from the Liberal Party to support him. And I went to the Liberal Party for the simple reason that I thought here was an opportunity to support the Liberal Party because Nielsen wasn't doing the job in latter years that he should have done. And now I say this much. I've said it before. I've said it in council. I say a pox on all political parties if they work to the detriment of the people of the Yukon.
We have got to take a break, but we will be back with MP Eric Nielsen and Executive Committee Member Norm Chamberlain. The program's talkback. The number is 667-7891 if you have a question or a comment on the topics being discussed. We'll be back in a minute.
A daycare conference will be held at the YWCA in Whitehorse this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The program for all 3 days will present information on daycare in the community. Interested groups will present reports and discussion groups will be set up. Thursday night at 8, Howard Clifford of Canada's Daycare Information Center will be speaking. Registration begins Friday morning at 9:30. Daycare is a topic which concerns many people in Whitehorse, directly or indirectly. You can help by turning out for this conference May 3rd, 4th, and 5th.
Tender fried chicken from Dixie Lee. Top in flavor and quality. Made from a secret recipe. For tender fried chicken called Dixie Lee.
Dixie Lee at 4th and Steele is open daily from 10 a.m. till midnight, Friday and Saturday till 1 a.m., and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Remember that secret recipe for tender fried chicken called Dixie Lee.
It's another Shriners Radio Bingo on CKRW. Yes, you could win $1,000. Play one game of Complete Blackout and win $1,000. Get your tickets for a dollar from most businesses in town or buy one direct from a Shriner. They'll be selling tickets in the streets on Friday night and Saturday afternoons this weekend and also next weekend. Buy a bingo card and play Shriner's Radio Bingo May 12th at 8 o'clock on Happy Day Radio.
Whitehorse Figure Skating Club proudly presents Fantasy on Ice. Evening performances at the Jim Light Memorial Arena will be on Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. Matinees will be on Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. Take the whole family to Fantasy on Ice. Adults $1.50 and children 75 cents.
Summer is coming on. And WHTV coming on strong with an offer to all cable subscribers. We want you to stay on the cable for the summer. And we've got more channels than ever before, more programs, and more movies than ever. Many of them new releases to television. So here's your chance to catch up on all the programs you wanted to see but missed during the busy winter. If you're a cable subscriber, a customer of WHTV on July 1st of this year, you are eligible for a year's free television. July 4th, three subscribers will be drawn to receive a year's free television. Join us on WHTV and stay with us through the summer. You may win an entire year of free cablevision. Remember, you are eligible for the draw if you are a cable subscriber as of July 1st, 1973.
Woolworth has jeans, 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 and more jeans, and at popular prices. Men's semi-bag jeans made of 100% cotton denim with wide belt loops and deep cuffs, sizes 28 to 36 at Woolworth, just $7.97 a pair. Ladies' GWG denim jeans have the traditional look with the 73 fit. Flared legs, sizes 8 to 40, priced at Woolworth for just $7.95 a pair.
Blue jeans are made for toddlers, too, with half boxer waist in little guy sizes, 2 to 3X, 288 a pair. Children's cuff denim jeans, sizes 4 to 6X, are priced at $3.99 a pair. Woolworth has a pair of jeans for every member of the family at prices you can really afford. Jeans, 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 and more jeans. Yes, when it comes to jeans, Woolworth has them all. Come in and see the Woolworth staff bottling their own jeans. Shop Woolworth in the Kwantlen Mall. It's 4 minutes before 12 noon. Once again, here's John.
We'll be going overtime with the program. Both of our guests have agreed to stay on until somewhere around 12:30, as long as there's the caller interest. Mr. Nielsen, on a couple of occasions during this show, Mr. Chamberlain has said that as far as the position paper on native land claims is concerned, you're supporting the natives and disregarding the considerations of other Yukoners. Your comment?
I made my own assessment of the concept that was being advanced by the Native Brotherhood, and I made my judgment accordingly. I leave it, to the public mind of Yukoners generally as to whether or not they feel that I'm acting against their overall best interests, and that's no discretion of mine. It'll have to be left there in any event. Let me say that at the moment, I don't think that I'm on the most popular side of what is developing into an issue. But I would hope that once Yukoners have full information, and if they treat their own assessment with reasoned, impartial, and unemotional judgment, I would hope that the vast majority of them would come to the same conclusion that I have come to. It may be that my assessment is wrong. And if my assessment is wrong, and if, heaven forbid, the matter is raised in the next federal election, which may be just around the corner, it would not only cause deep rifts in the community, but it would also probably reflect in the popular vote as far as I'm concerned. Again, I emphasize that the fundamental reason for my making the assessment that I did was that the concept is a valid legal concept, and it is recognized throughout the free world, the only exception at this moment being Canada. But to say that simply because I have recognized the validity of this concept, that I have come down in favor of one group of in our society against the interests of the other is, to put it in the most kindly way, a gross distortion of the processes which led to my value judgment in the matter.
John, Mr. Nelson, being a lawyer, knows full well that the judicial responsibilities and judicial decisions, but the end results, are the ones that should be acceptable to the people. Now, he speaks of Aboriginal rights. I say this much, and I echo what Mr. Trudeau said a few days ago at Kamloops when he was talking with reference to Kamloops Indians. He said, we've given the Indians all the money they want. If they have a beef, let them take it before the courts. Now, I believe in our judicial procedure. And if they have a beef, why don't they take it before the courts?
Is this where you feel the Yukon Native Brotherhood should be going now?
I think this is the way that they should go, so that the laws of the land and our judges are the ones should be the one that would be able to judge on the merits on what they have put forward. Now, for a member of the legal profession to argue against that particular philosophy would be strange to me. And I think he should agree that they should take the judicial course and go before the court.
I'll deal with that in a moment, John. Perhaps you want to take your caller now.
Good morning. Talk back.
Yes, John. I'd like to talk to Mr. Chamberlain, please.
Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chamberlain, I was just at the hospital this morning,
yeah.
And your natives all come in by taxi. I have to drive my car over the dam. And everything, and yet your Medicare system, they're allowed their taxi fares.
No. Let's stop right there. They're not there. If the natives go over there, they go on over there by taxi. They might go out under the Northern Health Services program, which has got nothing at all to do with... with Medicare. We don't pay the territorial
taxes. Well, you're in health and welfare.
Yeah, but that's federal.
And Norm, you're...
Sorry about that, folks. Good morning, talk back.
Yes, can I talk to Mr. Manson, please?
Please be nice, ma'am. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I sat here for almost an hour listening to this, and I want to congratulate Mr. Manson on his restraint during the program.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling.
I congratulate him, too, on that basis as well, but then he's trained to be restrained.
Eric, there was a question of going to the court for decisions on Aboriginal rights.
There are three alternatives that are available in order to come to grips with the matter of Aboriginal title. The matter can be dealt with by federal legislation. That's number one. Secondly, it can be dealt with by negotiation. And thirdly, it can be dealt with through the courts. Now, as in the United States, the most recent case coming out of the Supreme Court of Canada indicated quite clearly that the Supreme Court of Canada considered this a matter of a political nature rather than of a juridical nature. The decision, as you will recall, was split 3-3, with the deciding seventh judge getting out from under by a technical, resting his decision on a procedural technical basis. So that in reality, the decision in the Nishka case was a non-decision, and the ball was back in the court of the federal government, who have the root responsibility for the native claims in Canada, not just in the Yukon. So you're left with two alternatives: legislation or negotiation. Let me say first that negotiation is a far less expensive method of proceeding than is action through the courts. If we force the claims of the Native peoples of Canada through the courts, then we are going to find ourselves in the same situation that the Alaskan people found themselves in, with multi-million dollar pipelines being held up and still being held up as a result of injunctions being brought, 400,000 to 500,000 square miles in the Mackenzie Valley now under what has been called a freeze, but nonetheless is subject to impeded development. And thirdly, the third example I can think of is the James Bay project, where for over 4 months now the tribes in the James Bay area have been before the courts in Quebec, stalling a multi-billion dollar project in the development of James Bay Hydro, so that it is far more costly to proceed through the courts to the overall economic fabric of the country than it is to proceed by negotiation. As for legislation, it's out of the question, because no political party, regardless of what political party is in Parliament now, is going to take the bone in its teeth, as it were, and purport to legislate arbitrarily an extinguishment of these rights in Canada. So that negotiation is the only reasonable way out, and it's certainly the least expensive.
Well, Mr. Chrétien, just before you comment, Mr. Chrétien would seem to agree with that position, as he has appointed a negotiating team.
But because Mr. Nilsson and Mr. Chrétien perhaps agree with this particular function, we cannot close our eyes to the fact that we have due process of law in Canada.
But the Supreme Court has sent it back to the legislature.
The government of Canada have ways and means of going before the full Supreme Court of Canada. Mr. Nilsson's aware of that.
We suggested they do that in Parliament, that they go back. But then after those suggestions were made, and which were supported on all sides of the House except the Liberal side, it wasn't the government side. And when I say all sides, I mean the Social Credit Party and the NDP party and the Conservative Party and the Independents. So you've made me take up time by explaining that. But in any event, it was subsequent to that exchange in Parliament that the Yukon Native Brotherhood presented their brief on February 14th in Ottawa, and where the Prime Minister finally broke down and said, we're going to recognize the principle of negotiating.
No, he didn't recognize the principles of Aboriginal rights. He
I said, didn't say that.
He said that we'll negotiate. But
that's right.
Negotiation, and I will agree with you on an early statement you made, can mean all or nothing.
Well, I just
I'm just saying that in the process of this, there should be the recognition of the fact that we do have due process of law, and it should go to a judicial decision. And then the people will accept the fact that this is the law.
Well, it did. It did go to judicial consideration in the Supreme Court of Canada. And throughout the decision of all six judges who gave substantive decisions, ran either directly or inferentially a recognition of Aboriginal title. And I'm sure that, together with other advice that Trudeau has received over the intervening time between 69 and last February, caused him to change his mind, and I repeat, to recognize the principle of negotiation.
Good morning, Talkback.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Could I direct a question to Eric Nielsen, please?
Go right ahead.
Oh, Eric?
Yep.
Eric, do you sincerely think that the Indian people of the Yukon are underprivileged?
I think I have to answer yes to that question.
Well, then, how about, in the Indian Affairs, they have one segment of the office there that will back a native into going into private enterprise up to $35,000.
Yeah, well, underprivilege is not the same as discrimination.
Well, that's discrimination against the white populace, then.
That's fine.
Because we can't get it from the bank.
Yeah, well, I'll go along with that, but your original question had to do with underprivilege.
Well, you said it went along with being underprivileged. That's not being underprivileged.
Yes, but being underprivileged is different than discrimination. Underprivileged means not having the same kind of opportunities, the same kind of opportunities available, privileges available, as are to the general population. And I think all you have to do is to look around at some of these communities to realize that this condition does exist.
Well, okay, say these land claims do go through.
Well, they won't go in entirely as they
even a portion of it. Mm-hmm. Now, say this goes through. Wouldn't you think it would be only fair that the financial part of that has been spent in Indian Affairs throughout the year should be subtracted from what they are negotiating for?
I'm sure that's a factor that's going to be taken into very serious consideration and in-depth consideration.
Well, they might wind up in the
negotiating process.
How are they
going to
pay?
I don't think that they're going to wind up owning the Yukon, and I don't think they're going to wind up owning us, but I think the best example I can draw to your attention, if you've ever been there, is Old Crow. And that these people have occupied this land for centuries and hunted and trapped it and fished it, there can be no doubt at all. And if now the oil and gas companies and ourselves or whoever go in there and take away their livelihood, and incidentally with rat skins the way they are this year at $4 apiece, some of the people up there make $8,000 in a year. If you're going to take that livelihood away from them, then there has to be something in return. Sure.
Well, it shouldn't be taken from the taxpayer, then. It should be taken from the oil or the gas companies.
Well, this is being done in the way of federal tax revenues, and through federal tax revenues, presumably, will be drawn whatever cash settlement is made with the native people. This is going to happen not only here, but it's going to happen elsewhere in Canada, because the Yukon situation is going to be a precedent setting one.
Sir, we've got to move along. I've got to thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
Good morning, Talkback.
Hello, Mr. Dumas.
Yes?
I'd just like to say that the result of the last federal election shows how many people have confidence in Mr. Nielsen's judgment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Good morning. Talk back.
John, can I speak to Mr. Chamberlain, please?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Chamberlain?
Yeah.